Welcome back to the Georgia Show. It's now the Georgia Show, not the Georgia 2024 Show, because the election's over. I'm here with my co-host, Bill Quinn. And Bill, I don't think people realize the effort that goes into putting these shows up, man. I mean, it's we're putting out so much content, and to get it really informative is hats off to you, because I know you do a lot of work on this show.
Well, that's very kind. We have to acknowledge, too, that we have other shows that you and others are producing on CDM. You add it all up, and it's near a network. And some people are just now learning that as we have spent the last year and a half informing them.
So true. And we're going to be on more platforms soon, more announcements coming. We're brought to you this show by GeorgiaRecord.com. Please check us out. Put us in your daily scan, along with CDM.press. And sign up for our no-ad subscriptions. We're ramping up the ads across all the sites because we've got to bring in the revenue because we're expanding. But you can get rid of all those ads for $10 a month or $100 a year, and you get access to all 13 of our sites all over the world and the United States, Hispanic, et cetera. But check us out at our no-ad subscriptions. It's top right corner. It says subscribe with no ads. And you can do that and get rid of the pop-ups on your phone and everywhere else. So we have an interesting show today. Bill, I'll turn it over to you. Tell us what we got.
Sure. So we have a couple of great interviews that you were able to put together this past few days. One with Dr. Victory from the Wellness Company. Can't wait to see what she has to say, because so much is happening in the news at the moment regarding health and some of the concerns that the Wellness Company and the McCullough Foundation are bringing out that are truly concerning for millions across the country and really around the world. So that'll be up first. We're going to hear a wonderful interview that you did with Roger Stone and John Ritchie, and that should be fascinating since Roger is so close to the campaign and has been. And then we're going to talk through some of the candidates, the nominees that have been put forth by the Trump campaign. Some things look fine. Some things look a little odd, and we want to acknowledge those. Again, we're not shooting barbs. We're just raising facts so that folks can make sure that they understand who we're talking about. There's also some interesting other news that's coming out. Elon has made some and continues to make some interesting statements and posts regarding things that he's seeing, some of which the rest of us may not be catching yet. And so we'll see a little bit of that. And a couple other things before we're done. So, again, full show.
Yeah, very full show. And I'm going to go ahead and run the interview I did yesterday with Dr. Kelly Victory. I think we talked about the Trump appointments and how it's going to impact healthcare. We're back with Dr. Kelly Victory of the Wellness Company, and we want to ask her a lot about the results of the election and how that's going to impact healthcare. Thanks, Doc, for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me.
So the elections happened. We're having appointments at the cabinet level positions. What are your thoughts on so far of what names are being thrown out there?
Well, there's still an awful lot of unknowns, obviously, mm-hmm. and these are nominations that certainly haven't been confirmed yet. I think the president was very, very smart to bring Robert Kennedy Jr. on board in a role to head up HHS. I think that's a critical position and one that demands leadership. Hopefully, Bobby Kennedy will surround himself with people who are not only academics, but people who have broad clinical experience, research experience, public health experience, because that's what this is going to require. He's made a lot of very bold statements right out of the box about things, you know, regarding fluoride and seed oils and those sorts of things. A lot to tackle. Nothing is going to happen overnight, Todd. And I think that's what people need to get their arms around. We are not going to eradicate fluoride from the water, in January of next year. We are not going to eliminate all trans fats or seed oils overnight. These are lofty goals, I think, for us to look at. So number one, I think the nomination of Robert Kennedy Jr. to that role as the head of HHS is a good one. Right now, there's still lots of unknowns with regard to where all of the other positions are going to fall. But starting there, I think, is a good sign.
What about down ballot, if you will? I mean, yes, he can take the agency, but he's got to have a lot of people down ballot to to really implement the policy, right? I mean, in the lower positions, have you heard anything about that process?
100% that has to happen. And, you know, I am not critical of any one particular one. Right now, the nomination of Mehmet Oz to head up CMS, which controls Medicare, Medicaid, those sorts of functions. We have Marty Makary, whose name has been tossed around to head up the FDA. It's certainly those agencies, as you said, need to be totally revamped. There needs to be tremendous oversight that has been missing for decades. This didn't just happen in one or two administrations. We have things that need to happen both on a policy, from a policy perspective, but also from a legal perspective. We cannot allow, for example, Todd, people who work at the FDA, CDC, NIH, those sorts of places, to own parts of patents, for example, on drugs and therapeutics for which they are responsible for mandating or suggesting to be used on the population. These things, the conflicts of interest, are rife throughout those agencies. So it is going to be very important to put people at the helm of each one of them who can oversee that piece as well. So I look at this, as the revamping that needs to happen is really two-pronged. Part of it is just policies that will help to drive programs that will make Americans healthier again, take the burden off of our healthcare system, decrease the just stunning rates we have of chronic disease. But there's also this very important component of exposing and eliminating the fraud and corruption that have gone on behind the scenes and have largely driven faulty public health policy as a result.
And I know you're not running the company, but have you had any impact on the wellness company itself as far as maybe good impacts or good feedback into this new administration on what you're doing at the company?
Well, I think we are positioned very well. The wellness company was really born out of the debacle that was the COVID pandemic response. Mm-hmm. The people that I work with there, including people like Drs. Peter McCullough and Jim Thorpe and Harvey Reich, really were the titans during that, these last 5 years. Along with me, we've all been very, very outspoken proponents of a more measured approach to these sorts of things. And we have made it a commitment to put patients before profits and to allow people to have access to the kinds of things that they would need in a time of an emergency or a pandemic or when they're traveling, so that they are not beholden to or at the mercy of the healthcare system. What we saw during COVID was an unprecedented intrusion of third parties, whether it was insurers or politicians, the government, the mainstream media, people in the exam room who weren't invited there, and they disrupted the doctor-patient relationship. And so we are trying to return that. We are watching very closely, Todd, these various cabinet nominations, and certainly are hopeful that everything that we heard about this new administration will actually come to pass. We understand more than anyone what the burden of ill health is. We understand that we have a disease care system in this country, not a health care system. Right. And so I have been preaching for years, and now very much so at the wellness company, the idea that we cannot medicate, vaccinate, treat our way to good health. It starts with the behaviors, the lifestyle choices that people make, the foods we eat, the exercise we get, the quality of sleep, supplementation, those sorts of things. So although we do provide people access to a broad range of medical kits that include prescription medications for things, antibiotics and antivirals, medications for nausea and vomiting, we also provide a huge range of non-medicinal, non-prescription things, supplements that people can take to enhance their immune function, to enhance their sleep, to improve their cognition and their focus, those sorts of things. And I believe that really over time is what needs to happen with our entire health system, our entire approach to healthcare and medicine. And hopefully Robert Kennedy Jr. will really take that message and bring it forth in all of these different three-letter agencies.
Well, there's been a war against supplements, right? I mean, essentially anything that's not big pharma has been attacked and repressed. Am I right?
Oh, 100%. They would, yeah. You know, big pharma does not want you to know that something as simple as supplementing vitamin D, getting your vitamin D levels up into the desired range, not only prevents almost or decreases your risk of almost every form of cancer, but certainly drastically reduces your chance of becoming ill with something like COVID or RSV or influenza. They don't want you to know that, because if you can go to your local drugstore or grocery store and pick up a bottle of vitamin D, then you might not need their new fancy drug that costs $3,000, a dose. Yeah. Yeah. There's a reason. This is the follow the dollars.
You know, I saw on that vein, I saw an article about vitamin D toxicity the other day, and I'm wondering, is this like a narrative they're trying to push to get people to stop taking this stuff?
Well, clearly you can become, vitamin D is one of the vitamins that you can become toxic on because it is dissolved in the fat. Vitamins K, A, D, and E are dissolved in the fat in the body, as opposed to vitamins like C and B that are not dissolved in the fat, and therefore you just excrete them. You urinate out any excess. Mm-hmm. So you can, in theory, become vitamin D toxic. Mm-hmm. In my 30 plus years of practicing medicine, I've never seen a case of it. I think that there was some concern that people thought, if a little vitamin D is good, more is really good. And so they started taking mega doses. Mm-hmm. Again, I've never seen it clinically, but I believe, like you are intimating, that any hype about it or articles about it, it is really because they are trying to dissuade people from doing the very simple things. We saw this happen with, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and quercetin and all sorts of things that really are dirt cheap, very, very safe, taken by millions of people around the globe every year without ill effect. Yet when we suggested them on good authority that they would be helpful for COVID, the media and the powers that be came down on them very, very hard. And that is, again, about the control that Big Pharma has had, not only over pharmaceuticals, but over the media and over what we are allowed to hear, what we are allowed to know about, what voices are allowed to be spoken.
So I hope that, was it Kennedy talking about removing the advertising for Big Pharma on the, I think he was the one that mentioned that, right?
Yes, he did. And I've spoken about it quite a bit. That is a huge issue, and I'm hoping it's one that he will tackle pretty quickly in this next administration. The United States is one of two countries in the world that allow pharmaceutical advertising on television, New Zealand being the other. And the reason that Big Pharma wants to advertise isn't so that they can sell another dose or three of Ozempic. It's because they then control the media. They control what is said. Roger Ailes, the former CEO of Fox News, said once that he was very interested in eliminating pharmaceutical advertising from his network, from Fox News, but that he couldn't afford to do it because they represented 70% of the advertising dollars. When you have that kind of control, there's a reason why none of the hosts, none of the reporters say, nary a bad word is said about the COVID injections or anything else. You wouldn't hear about the importance of vitamin D, for example, during COVID, because they are paid, they are receiving advertising dollars from companies that don't want them to promote those things.
So you guys have been, and New Zealand's pretty screwed up too, but so you guys have been really innovative on the supplement packages that you have. Can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Absolutely. We've got a broad range of different supplements and formulations. One of the ones that Peter McCullough has really promoted and helped to design and formulate is one that's called Spike Support. It includes a number of things, very inexpensive, well-tolerated supplements, three in particular that help the body to eliminate or get rid of the bad side effects from the spike proteins that accumulated in the body largely as a result of the mRNA injections. It can happen also with COVID itself, the virus, but far more common and in greater amounts, people pile up these dangerous and toxic spike proteins as a result of the mRNA injections. And that formulation, for example, includes things like curcumin, which is related to turmeric. It has now kinase, which has been is an enzyme that is consumed by some Asian countries, for years. It's a byproduct of soybean fermentation. Bromelain, which comes from the pineapple plant, again another enzyme. So these are the sorts of things. We have a supplement to enhance sleep that doesn't include melatonin. Many people are very sensitive to melatonin, so it includes other things like ashwagandha. We are putting together, we have many supplements that help the immune system, including one of my favorites, which is our broccoli sprouts. Broccoli sprouts has the highest concentration of sulforaphane, which is a profound anti-cancer agent. You can't eat enough broccoli sprouts on their own to get what you need. So we have dried it and encapsulated it. And I think it's a great product for people who are looking for support for their immune system and for some the anti-cancer impact it would have. So if you go to the website, obviously there are just a tremendous number. I'm just rattling off a handful of the things that we're working on. We have things for cognition support, focus support. And I think that this really is the future of empowered healthcare is to stop looking constantly for a vaccine or a drug. There are so many things out there in terms of more natural, holistic ways that we can improve people's health and wellness and keep them from falling off the cliff into a disease state.
So last question, do you think now once Trump gets into office, which hopefully he does, will we find out what happened with COVID? I mean, we still don't really know.
Well, I think, slowly pieces and parts are coming out. I think that really anybody who's been paying attention now acknowledges that this was a manufactured virus. This was the result of gain of function research. It clearly came out of a lab in Wuhan, China, and there are fingerprints of many agencies and individuals here in the United States and the Department of Defense whose fingerprints are all over this. I think that more and more people, even those responsible for the debacle of the pandemic at response, people like Rick Bright or Walensky or Deborah Birx, those people are now acknowledging and coming out and saying, actually, it turns out that the masks didn't work, or we sort of made up the idea of social distancing, and turns out that asymptomatic spread wasn't a thing, and natural immunity really is important. It looks to me like people are scrambling to get on the right side of history. Yeah. They know there's a new sheriff in town, and Robert Kennedy Jr., to get circle back, has made it very clear, for example, at the FDA that people are going, they better pack their bags. His words, not mine. He said, preserve your records and pack your bags. So I'm hoping that we do expose some of this. There are bits of it, unfortunately, Todd, that I think we will never have an acknowledgement of. And I don't think there will ever, unfortunately, be legal repercussions to the things that were done. I believe that much of what happened was, in fact, crimes against humanity. Yeah. People did not get informed consent. These should never have been mandated. These shots should never have been mandated to anyone. They were not FDA approved at the time they were being mandated, which is a clear violation of the Nuremberg Code. People have a right to make decisions about what they put into their bodies, and they have a right to decide whether or not they want to participate in a medical experiment, which is exactly what those shots were when they were rolled out. So I think we will get more information, but I fear there will not be full satisfaction for people like you and me.
I think they just ran a big clinical trial without informed consent, just working on the product. Yeah. Doc, anything else you want to get out?
No, I just think it's a time to be cautiously optimistic. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that we have a new administration and one that looks like it's going to do some very, very good things, it is, I believe, people should not rely on the federal government for preparedness. This is something we all need to take into our own hands. People need to be prepared themselves to take care of their own health, their own wellness. You should not, I'm not a prepper, but I do preach rational readiness. I think that people should have on hand the kinds of things, the medical treatments, the sorts of medications that they would need in a crisis so that, again, as I said, you're not beholden on a system that may well be totally overwhelmed or underwater, literally or figuratively, at a time of crisis. And it's best to have some of those things at the ready.
Thank you very much, Dr. Victory. We'll have you back down the road. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Sorry, on mute. What do you think about that?
It was a fascinating interview. She touched on a couple points I hadn't even really thought of. And she didn't even get into the latest discoveries coming out of the McCullough Foundation that we reported last week. So, you know, there's going to be a lot to talk about. I'm actually, in some ways, I'm more hopeful that the new administration led by Trump with RFK Jr. and people like Elon and Vivek in it. You know, Elon himself has said many times, you know, if you got to tell the truth and somebody doesn't like it, I don't care. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that that becomes a bit more of the call sign for what we see going forward. I did want to expand just a bit on, she talked about, you know, rational readiness. I think that's going to become part of my dialogue. I love that. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that has now been expanded upon is that report that we covered last week out of Seattle. And people are now sort of generalizing it across, well, is this potentially risky for virtually everybody that took the shot? And the answer appears to be, yes, it may be. It may be. And so Ron Johnson had a very interesting interview this week. I'd like to play it. It's fairly short. Sure. That underscores that and then talks about, you know, I want to underscore that there are ways that people can mitigate any of this spike protein that may still be coursing around their body. And it may become increasingly important to do so. So I'll go ahead and play this piece from Ron Johnson.
Our biggest problem is societally. You know, a very high percentage of Americans got those shots. They don't really want to face the reality that maybe they're still ticking time bomb coursing through their veins. You know, the people that in the medical establishment, in public officials, elected officials, they don't want to admit that something they pushed on the public or recommended to their patients might have killed them or injured them permanently. They don't want to admit it. So that's our biggest problem right now, is nobody wants to admit they were wrong. And there just aren't that many people like myself or Bobby or you that are willing to really force the American public. No, open up your eyes. We have to look at this. We have to recognize what actually happened here so it won't happen again. So we can take a look at these mRNA shots that they want to roll out for just about everything and, you know, call them on their lies. These things are going to biodistribute all over your body, and whatever is inside that lipid nanoparticle is going to do something to your body. And we better test it far more thoroughly than we did with the COVID injection.
So a couple things there. One is you heard Dr. Victory speak of the spike support formulation that they offer. You'll also find, if you go back and look at our reporting last week, you'll see that those three supplements are the center of one of the strategies that Dr. McCullough and others are suggesting. Bromelain, curcumin, and natokinase. And all three are available in that spike supplement. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, they're not, you know, these are not the, you know, they're not going to cost you $1,000 a month to be able to get this type of support, and can help you begin to get rid of any of this that's still inside. So yes. I thought that was important to just underscore, because my own instinct is, if this stuff is still in folks and it's doing damage they don't know about, they deserve to know about it, and they deserve the chance to do something about it.
Completely agree. And it's not just medical that you need to prepare, rational preparedness. It's also your financial portfolio. How do you do that? Maybe you should talk to David Cross if you've got a death in the family, a divorce, a sale of a business, some kind of life event that has big chunks of money moving around, David Cross is probably the guy, he's our guy that we recommend to at least bring up the issues you have and get some rational advice. So let's run an ad from him, please.
This is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
Well, Bill, do we want to move on to the next segment, or do you want to talk about some of the other issues on the...
Well, let's hear from Roger Stone. You guys had a wonderful conversation with him, so let's hear from him as we go forward, and then we can supplement with several of the other things that we are working on back at CDM South headquarters.
Excellent. So I'm going to first run our new program, your Intel Brief, 10 to 12, Monday through Friday, Eastern, is a show called Output. We're getting massive success. I'm just going to run this real quick. So John and I do that show 10 to 12 Eastern, Monday through Friday, stream on X, Getter, CDM.press, and on our Rumble channel, and soon to be more. But we sat down with Roger Stone this week. Fascinating interview on a lot of subjects. I think you'll enjoy it.
And I just want to remind everybody, make sure you go to CDM.press, and you can stream this live on X as well as on Rumble. And now we got Roger Stone with us. We're going to bring him in right now. Hey, Roger, how are you?
Good morning. Great to be with you guys.
Hey, thanks for coming on. You know, one of the reasons why we found this opportunity to get you on so fascinating is because this whole nomination process we're going through with the president right now, with the president-elect, and how quickly things are shifting and some of the things that are going on. And I just wanted to kind of get your overview of what's going on and what you're hearing about the process, and especially with this shift from Gates to Bondi and what's happened there, and get a good update there.
Sure. I mean, first of all, I think it's important to see these things in a historical context. So anytime in the recent history of modern politics, whenever an outsider emerges as president, and there's really only been three, Jimmy Carter kind of came out of nowhere to beat the Democrat establishment and then was immediately swallowed up by the permanent Washington Democrat establishment, Stuart Eisenstadt, Brzezinski, and so on, who proceeded to destroy his presidency. Even to this day, I don't think Carter was a bad man. I think he was an honest man. I think he was a Christian. He was just a terrible president. But he wasn't a globalist, and he wasn't evil. He was just incompetent. His presidency was hijacked. They tried to do it to Ronald Reagan. They had some limited success. The Bush neocon types responsible for TEFRA, the Reagan tax increase, which in his biography, he says, is the single greatest mistake he made while in the White House. And now you saw it certainly in the first Trump presidency, where they tried to infiltrate your presidency with people like General John Kelly, or National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster, Attorney General Bill Barr. That's not going to happen this time. And that's the context in which I think you have to see these nominations. President Trump is being very careful to pick men and women who understand their job is not to implement their agenda. Their job is not to dilute or delay or derail what Donald Trump wants done. Their job is to implement an America First agenda across the board, whether that's closing the borders or whether it's reducing the national deficit or whether it's sparking an affordable housing boom in this country. He's being very, very judicious. Now, that said, you know, the rhinos always make their move, always make their move. Here's how it goes. Oh, you're great, but you don't know that much about how Washington works. We can help you. You should name this guy or this woman as your chief deputy or your top assistant. That's being watched very carefully. I can see a number of the rhino establishment types trying to move in on this administration. It's not going well for them, I must say. You have some standout appointments here, starting with Tulsi Gabbard. One thing I know, if Nikki Haley is against you, that means you're absolutely the right person for the job. You know?
You're on the right track.
So, Roger, you feel good that these people will stay in their guardrails and implement the president's policy, the people that have been selected so far.
I really do. I honestly do. I saw Marco Rubio last night. He wasn't my – I like Marco Rubio. We have a good personal relationship. I must tell you, he's been on constituent services matters. You know, when my wife had cancer, he helped to get her into an experimental program at NIH. When my son's pilot's license, which there's nothing controversial about, but it got jammed up somewhere in the bureaucracy and he couldn't work. I called my senator and my senator did a great job. So he's been very good to me and my family personally. I like him personally. My wife is Cuban American and she likes him because he's Cuban. I like his policies in this hemisphere where he's been very hardline on Cuba, on Venezuela, a real hardline anti-communist. He's a little too much of a neocon for me regarding, say, Ukraine. But he understands that he's not allowed to submerge the president's agenda for his agenda for the president's agenda. So I actually think he's going to do a great job because he knows who the boss is. So I feel very good about the appointments. Now, the Matt Gaetz thing is unique. First of all, I think Matt Gaetz would have been great as Attorney General.
Yeah, I do too.
Proven that he's got balls, he's got courage, he will take them on. He knows who the bad guys are. But I think he correctly has made a selfless decision here to withdraw, because at the end of the day, I think he recognized that he strikes so much fear into the heart of the political establishment and into the evil media Democrat criminal cabal that has been running the country, that they would do anything necessary to destroy him. So he's a hard, you know, he's a hard-headed counter of votes. I think he recognized that this whole thing was going to become a circus and a distraction, so he's stepped away. Now, he could easily win his seat back in Congress in the special election if he wanted it. I don't think that that's his highest and best service. I would expect him to now surface in another role that doesn't require Senate confirmation, where he could be a great help to the president.
Maybe a special prosecutor or something like that?
What we don't have, you know, that's a key point. We don't have a special a prosecutor law. There's no such thing as a special prosecutor. Jack Smith's appointment is unconstitutional. The independent counsel law we used to have, which the Democrats loved when they were using it to investigate George W. Bush and Iran-Contra, and they didn't love it when they started investigating Bill Clinton and whether he had sold military secrets to the Chinese for campaign contributions. Now, suddenly, they didn't like the independent counsel law. So they didn't like it when it was being used to look into Whitewater. So it's expired. There's no such thing as a special counsel. Attorney General Merrick Garland has no authority to appoint a special counsel who hasn't been confirmed by the U.S. Senate. You can't just give some private citizen or some former prosecutor sweeping prosecutorial powers to look into anything he wants and an unlimited budget, which is not anywhere in the federal budget, without the approval of Congress. Constitutionally, no executive branch employee can be unfireable by the president. But the way Garland has has structured this, those things are true. So Judge Cannon in Florida correctly ruled that Jack Smith's appointment is unconstitutional. You know, Andrew Weissman can hold his breath on TV as long as he wants and jump up and down and have a lavender fit, but he's wrong. There is no authority for a special counsel, but Matt Gaetz could certainly be a White House counsel. He could coordinate with those who are confirmed, who are in proper positions in the Justice Department. Just talking off the top of my head, let me make clear here. I think it's unnecessary, but I'll say it anyway. I speak only for myself.
Right.
These are my opinions. I've been working with some on the transition team. I've been talking to the president, but the views here are all my own, not necessarily anybody else's.
Sure. Let me ask you this, Roger, real quickly. I mean, we see what's happened with Gaetz, and now Bondi's in, and she's the new nominee for that AG position. But my question to you is this. We had a cold opening there with Harry Enten. He was talking about the massive social media use that the GOP had this time around, how much we've been out there, how much we've been doing in this space, especially during the campaign. Now, it seems like after the campaign, we've kind of gone quiet. We're making appointments and nominees and things like this. But do you think, I mean, judging, just going back and looking at, you know, an after action review of the Gaetz situation, because I agree with you. I think Gaetz would have been the one we needed. He was the hammer we needed. But it's almost like he didn't have, we weren't out there on the CNNs, the MSNBCs, the pundit. We weren't using that campaign strategy we used during the campaign for these guys as well. Do you think we're missing that element with our appointees right now?
Absolutely. In fact, I learned last night that there is a gag on everybody who's been appointed. They're not allowed to do media interviews, which I think is a gigantic mistake. They need to be pressing their case with the American people. You want to put heat on this handful of Republican senators who are, you know, thinking about voting against the president's nominee. There's no better way than letting Tulsi Gabbard, for example, who's probably the best communicator in the Republican Party today, enormously talented woman who can handle herself and isn't going to get off message. Not letting her do interviews, I personally think is a mistake. I'm going to raise this question with the president next time I speak to him. We're not using our single best asset. Our people are articulate. They can articulate the vision of where he wants to take the country. But once you're nominated, you're not allowed to do any interviews. I think that's a mistake. I think you raise an excellent point.
And you know something else, too? We've got a lot of good pundits and people out there that are articulate, yourself included, people that can go out and express what's going on. Why? It just seems like we're not on the CNNs. I sat for an hour yesterday watching MSNBC just run Gaetz through the ringer, and there was nobody on there to counter it whatsoever. And that's where I think we get lost.
But here's the good news. I actually looked this up the other night. Ari Melber's show on MSNBC.
It's true.
I think it's called The Beat Off or something like that.
Yeah.
26,000 people were watching it. 26,000 people. I'm sorry.
I saw that.
My daily show at Rumble does five times that. There's nobody watching this garbage. And as I'm sure you've seen, all of their ratings, both MSNBC and CNN, have dropped substantially since the election. Now, I don't get my news from CNN for the same reason I don't eat out of the toilet. But I still think it's important that we be out there on social media and on alternative media pressing the case for the president's nominees.
Yeah, I think we got to quit letting, because right now it's almost like we're letting the Senate and everybody drive this. And look, the battle lines are drawn right now. We can see it over Gaetz, what's happened. And they're not going to stop. They just keep coming. I was telling Todd, I read this piece online this morning from CNN, and now they're going after McMahon, you know, and then saying she did something untoward. I mean, it's never going to stop. I mean, we just got to be able to counter this message, I think. I think that's the...
You're absolutely right. Look, if they wanted to, as they clearly did, and we had a lot of leaks, they want to dig into the ethics report against Matt Gaetz. Okay, fine. it's time to release the list of members of Congress that the U.S. government paid settlements to for various sexual harassment and assault cases.
Yeah,
this is our tax money. We have a right to know who those people are. Speaker Johnson, if you're listening, dude, it's time to expose, the perps.
Absolutely.
Roger, any thoughts on the Senate seat in Florida? Who might DeSantis might pick?
Yes, I have very strong feelings on this. First of all, while Lara Trump would be excellent, there's zero chance that she will be appointed. Mm-hmm. Let me point out to you that after he became the Republican nominee, Ron DeSantis did exactly zero to help Donald Trump got elected. There was a massive rally in Doral. I was there. Mm-hmm. He would have been very warmly received if he showed up and endorsed the president. If you will go back and look carefully, he never actually endorsed Donald Trump. He simply said he was withdrawing for the race because a majority of Republicans had decided that Trump should be the nominee. Even in his remarks to the convention, he never actually endorses Donald Trump. He could have campaigned for him effectively in the state. He could have campaigned for him outside the state. He did precisely nothing. So even though Marco Rubio's term runs to 28 because of the presumed timing of his resignation at the time his name goes up to the Senate, the governor only gets to fill that seat through 26 and then in 2026, which is the same time that Ron DeSantis's term as governor is ended, and he can't run again. He's limited to two terms. He will be eligible to run for that seat, and he probably will run for that seat. Mm-hmm. And he'll have competition when he runs for that seat. Donald Trump's endorsement will be just as potent then as it is now, maybe more potent. So my guess is that the governor will appoint a placeholder. We saw this, by the way, before. Charlie Crist appointed a fellow named George Lemieux, who was his administrative assistant. We used to call him the little Frenchman. He went on to get his ass beat in the next election. He couldn't hold the seat. So I think you're going to get a placeholder appointed here, some non-entity, probably some DeSantis staff member, actually, to fill the seat for 2 years. And then there'll be a special election in which I would predict that if Governor DeSantis runs, he has to run for something because he has no other way to keep his presidential aspirations alive. He's going to want to run again in 2028 when he will get beat ignominiously again.
I agree.
It's a free country. People are entitled to make fools of themselves if they want to. Yeah. But I think that's how it will go down. Now, it's a pity because Lara Trump would be a great senator. That would be a truly great appointment. And he could go a long way into repairing his relationship with the president.
Yeah, I agree.
But it's not in him. He's not going to do it.
Yeah, that's too bad. You know, I was down in Palm Beach when he first announced that he was running. He was going to run. I remember seeing a picture on the paper on the front page where he was at a podium. And I remember in that picture over right behind him was Jeb sitting in a chair behind him. And I thought, that's the end right there. That right there is the end of DeSantis's run. And I don't understand why he did it. I agree with you. I think he could have come out and endorsed Trump and he would have been the heir apparent. He could have had all the MAGA money, could have done quite well. And instead, he kind of just stuck his finger in everybody's eye. So now he's the U.S.'s best governor, I guess. So, I don't know. We'll see.
I would argue with that.
I understand. I'm not from your state, so.
I would tell you this. If my friend Chris Gleason were here, he'd really argue.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, Roger. And Chris is a friend of the show and of CDM. But elections in Florida. Let's change subjects a minute. We all know there's a problem down there. I'm on the Miami-Dade rec. What do we do about this situation in Florida where there's a lot of shenanigans happening in multiple vectors, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, let me just say, Chris Gleason is one of the most brilliant guys I know. Mm-hmm. He's also been very helpful to me in my faith walk, in my redemption, in the blood of the cross. Mm-hmm. So he's not just a political advisor and a friend. He's also a spiritual advisor. Somebody whose friendship I really, really value. He's helped me and my family enormously, not financially, but spiritually.
Right.
He's a very, very good guy. And he's right. We don't have the gold standard in our election system. We have one of the dirtiest, most corrupt election systems in the country. Now, it's not in every county. There are some counties where things are done absolutely by the book. But in the larger counties, most of them controlled by Democrats, but not all of them, we have dirty voter lists. We have mail-out ballots or mail-in ballots that the outbound mail is not properly marked, addressee unknown to come back. And we know, for example, in Lake County, in the congressional primaries in 2022, I'm sure this happened in 2024 as well, when those outgoing ballots were returned because it was addressee unknown, somebody cast those ballots. Somebody inside the Board of Elections cast those ballots. I believe Laura Loomer probably won her congressional primary and virtually certain of it.
Yeah.
So it has to be dealt with, but it will only be dealt with when we have a different governor, when we have a different governor and a different attorney general. The current attorney general of Florida, Ashley Moody, I'm sure she's a very nice lady, but she's completely ineffectual. She's afraid of her own shadow. She takes her orders from Ron and Casey. She's going to run for governor, which candidly is a joke. She can't point to any significant accomplishment as attorney general. I think if Byron Donalds, for example, were elected governor, he would clean this up. He would clean this up. And I like him very much. I think he'd be a great governor. I like Jimmy Patronis. I think he's more likely now to run for that open congressional seat being vacated by Matt Gaetz, but he's another honest guy who I think would clean up the mess. Ron is too invested in the system here.
Yeah,
you got a number of these Board of Elections heads that he's appointed, and they are among the most corrupt. Ground zero here is Palm Beach County. This is the most corrupted county in the state in terms of our voting system. It has to be cleaned up, but it won't be cleaned up until we have a different governor, a different secretary of state who's appointed by the governor, and a different attorney general. And then cleaning up the system is an absolute key. One of the reasons it doesn't happen is because we've done so well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, we won Miami-Dade County, which, you know, is one, it's either the first or second largest county in the state, has always historically been, you know, a Democrat majority county. We have to hit our vote goals there. There are millions of Republicans in Miami-Dade. So if we underperform there, we lose. But now we're winning it. Donald Trump just won it. Ron DeSantis won it in 2022. So the state is demographically moving our way. And we're making really deep inroads into Democrat voter groups like Hispanics. And I'm not talking about Cuban or Venezuelan Hispanic Americans. I'm talking about Puerto Rican Democrats or Puerto Rican Americans who used to be like solidly 80-90% Democrat, now voting majority for Donald Trump. So we're making, there is a positive Democratic shift going on in the state.
Do you think Gaetz wants to run for governor?
You know, he's talked about it. I think, unfortunately, his candidacy would face the same kind of smears and innuendos that they used against him. And name a conservative newspaper in the state of Florida. Name one.
The Miami Independent.
Well, CDM product.
Yes, but let me rephrase it. Name a conservative newspaper that produces a print edition.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Let me ask you real quickly then, what about Bondi? How does she get through?
I think so. First of all, I like her very much. She's tough and she's feisty and she's very loyal to the president. For my own show today, I'm trying to find this video of her really dissecting the Biden Burisma scam. Mm-hmm. She did in a phenomenally fiery speech. I think she's going to be very, very good. I think they're not going to know what hits them. I think the establishment may be breathing easier today because she's not Matt Gaetz. I think that's a mistake. When it comes to policy and when it comes to a commitment to justice, she's Matt Gaetz in high heels, I'm telling you.
Interesting. Okay.
Interesting. Hey, one last question for you.
By the way, she was my dark horse candidate for governor before she got elected. That's who I would have really, I love Brian Daniels, Donalds, don't get me wrong, but Pam was actually she was my dream candidate. I don't know that she would have done it, but that's who I would like to have seen.
Let me ask you one last question. It was a piece that was written yesterday I was reading where they're talking about now that the transition process, Trump and his campaign are not playing by the transition rules, whatever that is, that there was some memorandum of agreement they wouldn't sign into. So they're not going through the normal process, which, you know, everybody, not even in these stupid media outlets that are putting this out, they're even admitting it's his choice. It's not like he can't do this or that it hasn't been done previously. And now that somebody even said, oh, when he's talking to foreign, you know, dignitaries or whatever, if he's talking to countries, he's not letting the State Department in on it. And I was reading this and laughing, going, this is one of the most ridiculous things. And then I heard somebody kind of say, oh, I think they're trying to set him up for some kind of a problem with this. I don't see it. I was just curious, what are your thoughts? I wouldn't let State in on I wouldn't let him in on anything I was doing.
Yeah, let me translate that for you. We don't know who he's thinking about appointing, which is what upsets us, because we want to be able to infiltrate the process with our quislings, and we don't know what's going on. And therefore, if he accepts federal funding for his transition, then they would be able to infiltrate it, and they would be able to crank up their smear machine against nominees that they don't like and start promoting those they do. Let's give you the best possible example. Mike Rogers, the former congressman from Michigan, for FBI director. I've got an idea. Why bother with Mike Rogers? Let's just ask James Comey if he'll take the job again.
So why is that happening, Roger? Why is Trump thinking that way?
I don't think he is. I mean, I think there may have been some who recommended Rogers, but I don't believe he's under serious consideration. Okay, today he got the warm endorsement of Andrew McCabe.
That's what I was about to say last night. Andrew McCabe was glowing for him.
If that isn't the kiss of death, I don't know what is. So look, the president, a congressman calls him, a senator calls him. If they're a Republican, he's going to take the call. Okay, He really is committed to trying to unite the country, and he understands that it's not about revenge. His revenge is returning this country to unprecedented peace and prosperity and security and justice. If he can do that, he will go down in history as one of our greatest presidents, with Washington and Jefferson and Lincoln. People hate it when I say this. And Eisenhower, who was one of the greatest presidents, but doesn't get credit for it. He knows that. He knows that a boom economy, anchored in low energy prices, because we're back to drilling and exploring for gas and oil again, is going to generate millions of dollars in revenues, and using tariffs, not because he's not a free trader, because he actually is a free trader. But if you're not going to agree to a free trade agreement, then we're going to use the club of tariffs to make you play fair, to make you level the playing field. Trump has this really odd an antiquated view that our trade agreements should be good for us as well as our trading partners. It's been one-sided for too long. And he's a businessman. I honestly think, and I was told this by someone who's on the trip, when he met with the leader in North Korea, he said to him, look, you got two choices here. You can continue to be frozen out of the international scene. You could continue to be seen as an international outlaw, or we can work together to make your country really rich and successful. At the same time, we're helping our country become rich and successful, and you'll be the most popular president in the country. Bring your people prosperity, and they will love you. We can help you do that.
Interesting.
Scrap your weapons. Let's work together to make your country economically successful, because people everywhere want the same thing. They want economic opportunity. They want food on the table at reasonable prices. They want good schools for their children, and they want peace. They don't want nuclear war. It's not incidental that the little rocket man put his nuclear weapons development program on hold, because I think he kind of got it. Of course, as soon as Biden came in, we went right back to ice cold hostilities.
Okay, I got one more question. What about this World War III? Is Trump working it behind the scenes to stop this from happening?
I certainly hope so. I mean, I believe so, but I think he's being relatively discreet. Mm-hmm. But as you said earlier in the show, he's in touch with these foreign leaders. Mm-hmm. We have to avert World War III. I'm sure everybody saw when the Secretary of State said that, you know, we're going to get every dollar we possibly can out the door to Ukraine before Trump comes in. That's outrageous, because the people just voted overwhelmingly for peace. Mm-hmm. And now we're giving the go ahead for the use of long range missiles to hit targets deep in Russia. These are NATO missiles, technically, even though Ukraine is not a NATO nation, and they're we provided them. They're U.S. missiles. Now, the good news is there's nobody in Ukraine who knows how to operate these missiles. And I think there's some evidence, at least, that Zelensky doesn't want a world war. Yeah. Putin doesn't want a world war. Had there been peace talks going, had there been negotiations, I think this could have been resolved a long time ago. But Joe Biden's people don't want peace. They want war. They want war. They don't want to resolve this peacefully. I hope and pray the president is using backstage diplomacy to try to get this resolved prior to his being sworn in.
No, hope so. Roger, how do people, what's your show, by the way? You were talking about your show. Which one's your show, and how do people follow you?
Two of them. So I do a show on Rumble every day. It's at rumble.com/Roger Stone. It's called The Stone Zone, or just go to Rumble and look up The Stone Zone. You can follow us there. And then every weekend, I'm on 77 WABC Radio in New York. Now, wherever you are in the country, you can listen from 3 to 6 Eastern, 3 hours on radio, my friends. Not that easy, but always interesting and lively. Just go to WABCRadio.com, WABCRadio.com. We're live streaming in 163 countries around the world. It's politics, food, and politics. That's what we talk about.
That's great. Hey, Roger, thank you so much for staying as long as you did. It's always, I mean, this is just a dearth of information here, and we appreciate you coming on, and hopefully you'll come back and join us again.
Well, I'm happy to be here. I'm a big, big fan of the Miami Independent.
Thank you.
Read it regularly.
We got to get you to contribute, Roger. Keep promising.
I just had, four more hours in the day.
In a day, 28 instead of 24, right?
Todd, you raise a good point. I've been thinking about a few things I want to write.
Cool. Great. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Roger. Appreciate it.
Take care. I thought that was a good interview.
That was a fascinating interview. And wasn't it nice that he took the time to acknowledge, the work of Chris Gleason, who we know has been just doing an amazing amount of work for now 4 years or longer. And he took the time to acknowledge that. That was great.
They're both over there in Pinellas. So I think they have a background relationship along with others as well.
Are you saying we're seeing Roger Stone at a backyard cookout? What are we talking about?
It's possible. do you want to, we don't have a lot more time, but let's get out what you wanted to talk about.
Well, there's enough content where I think what we're going to do is take two of the things we're going to cover, and we're going to push them over to the Georgia record. There are a couple nominees that I think bear a bit of scrutiny so that people are well aware. We're not saying that there's a mistake been made, but we want to make sure that the facts are out. There is one particular video I want to show. It's less than a minute. But, for many years, people have looked at public communications, NPR and others, and thought, well, at the end of the day, I can trust what NPR and those kind of guys are telling me. Elon put out a very interesting tweet regarding the CEO of NPR and something she said recently. I want to play this, and I want to hear you hear her compare finding truth and characterizing it as a distraction.
One of the most significant differences critical for moving from polarization to productivity is that the Wikipedians who write these articles aren't actually focused on finding the truth. They're working for something that's a little bit more attainable, which is the best of what we can know right now. And after 7 years there, I actually believe that they're onto something. That for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth isn't necessarily the best place to start. In fact, I think our reverence for the truth might have become a bit of a distraction that is preventing us from finding consensus and getting important things done.
So the next time you're asking yourself, you know, why is it that I find myself always getting the right story from, you know, from the Georgia Record and the rest of the properties in CDM and from the Georgia 2024 show, now the Georgia show. That's why, because we're going to focus on the truth, and it is not a distraction. It is the underpinning of the way to go forward.
It is the mission, you know, but I always used to think you could trust NPR because they talk real soft and they act real, you know, intelligent. But anyway, that's just an observation of mine over the past few decades. What else, Bill? Is that it?
That's it for today. I guess we'll see folks next Wednesday at 7 p.m.
All right.
Where did I put it? There we go.